proceed to the second case of the morning. The Gamboa versus Velez. Mr. Nordberg.
Thank you, Judge Mannion. Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. Mr. Gamboa alleges that between 1997 and 2000, the defendant police officers acted out a conspiracy to frame him and four others for one specific crime, the murder of Sindolfo Miranda. We filed this interlocutory appeal from the denial of our motion to dismiss, seeking the answer to a discrete and dispositive legal issue, an issue of statutory interpretation. Namely, is the conspiracy alleged by Mr. Gamboa characterized by the continuity that is required to establish a pattern of racketeering activity under the RICO Act? The district court answered this question yes, for two particular reasons. First, the alleged conspiracy, although it's no longer going on right now, lasted for 3 years, allegedly. And second, because the alleged conspirators performed a sufficient number of predicate acts that are recognizable under the RICO Act. This morning I'll explain why that decision was incorrect.
Before you start explaining, let me just ask you this. Are you essentially arguing that if the actions of the defendants are all related to a single scheme, that is never sufficient to establish the pattern requirement? I mean, would that collapse the Morgan factors, leaving only the issue of whether it was a single scheme?
No, actually, Judge Rovner, a single scheme is sufficient in some instances to establish a pattern under RICO, and we're not claiming that it's not. But that single scheme has to be characterized by one general common sense thing, and that is there needs to be an implicit threat of continued racketeering activity. In the H.J. case, the Supreme Court, they specifically held that a single scheme could conceivably represent a pattern for RICO purposes. And they gave a couple examples of how that could be the case. One of them, and probably the quintessential example of racketeering, would be the window insurance scam, where you have a hoodlum who shows up at a businessman's door on the first of a month and says, listen, I want $500, and I'll make sure your windows don't get broken this month. I'm going to come back on the first of every month. You're going to pay me $500. That's going to be the premium for keeping your windows in one piece. Now, that would be a single scheme. His scheme is to get $500 a month from this person. But the reason that would represent a RICO pattern, whether it existed in an open-ended context, meaning that it was an ongoing when the claim was brought, or a closed-ended, meaning it had occurred for a certain closed period of time that had ended, it would still represent a racketeering pattern because, by its nature, that scheme contains an implicit threat of ongoing criminal activity.
Well, okay, so taking your example, the conduct in this case regards the investigation of a murder, which these defendants are called to do in numerous other cases. I mean, that's what they do. They very often investigate murders. So are you asking us to hold that although the defendants may have allegedly abused the process to achieve a particular result in this murder case, that there is no implication that they would do so in any of the other or many of the other murder investigations in which they are engaged?
Mr. Gamboa, in this complaint, and the way it was understood by the district court, and the way Mr. Gamboa allowed it to be understood by not proceeding differently in the context of our motion for a more definite statement in the district court, alleged a closed single instance of a racketeering scheme in this situation. His allegations are of a one-time frame-up that have a singular objective and a built-in ending point. He could have conceivably, if he could have, I can't really answer that for him, if he could have, consistent with Rule 11 and other federal rules, alleged that this was what H.J. recognized as the second paradigm example of racketeering, and that is business as usual, a business as usual sort of racketeering claim, that perhaps he would have. But that's not this case. This case is the case that was certified by the district court and by this court in accepting the interlocutory appeal, specific, limited question of whether a single scheme that ends without an indication that it can be repeated,
so
will be repeated.
Basically, your argument is that at this stage of the proceedings, the allegations here can in no way indicate that this is the way these defendants do regularly do business.
The way the district court put it, I think, is apt. And that is that his complaint does not permit the suggestion that the defendants intended to, or threatened to commit similar acts in future investigations. The complaint, as interpreted by the district court, which motivated us to pursue the certification of this question, specific, limited question of law for this court to decide, does not contemplate future or additional alleged frame-ups.
I suppose, at least an implicit threat of future harm.
Exactly. I mean, it does not contemplate that. What the complaint contemplates is a one-time frame-up that had a definite ending point, and that is the conclusion of the investigation into the Miranda murder and the conclusion of the subsequent judicial proceedings on that related to that investigation. If this were a different case, then it most likely wouldn't be proper for interlocutory appeal. But it is the case that it is. It is the complaint that it is. It was characterized as such below by the district court, by the city in our attempt to determine whether or not interlocutory appeal was appropriate, and by acquiescence by Mr. Gamboa in not attempting to reframe the issue and assert that he was claiming other than what his complaint alleges.
One way that might change that is, first of all, if the facts of this case confine it to that murder, that at least might, and if the district court framed it that way, then that makes your argument at least plausible. The thing that is missing here, for me at least, and that is facts about this case that would come up with some sort of a motive of why the police would focus on this particular murder and the way they did, allegedly did. If the motive was this particular guy, what's his name, Miranda, whatever it is,
Miranda,
there was some reason why this case had to be ended for what, I don't know what their motive was, versus in this sort of case, this is the kind of a case we have to take this kind of aggressive action or whatever they want to call it, that would then imply there are other cases that may come along. But we don't have, at least I don't see it, any way that would allow it open-ended.
Exactly.
There, if we had more facts, it might be able to maybe determine either it is not or it is, depending on what the motive for the murder was and the investigation of the murder, I guess.
I understand and I agree. I think that if the facts alleged were different, if the facts alleged somehow supported a suggestion of business as usual, or that this was not a particular closed system, a closed investigation that had a one-time frame-up, then perhaps there could be a conceivable complaint that might state a claim. However, that is not this case. And this court has consistently held that in cases where there is one overarching scheme, such as the one alleged in this case, that you cannot establish a RICO claim because there is no implicit threat of future racketeering activity beyond the parameters of that specific scheme. Now, in this scheme, it was obvious throughout and also retrospectively that what these various predicate acts were aimed at was solving this murder and convicting and getting convictions of these particular defendants on this murder. It was clear from the beginning there was an ending point in sight, is a way to look at it. This is a sort of scheme that had a natural ending point that was evident at the time it was going on. It's also evident looking at it retrospectively. And although it wasn't a certain date that it was going to end on, there was no date certain, it was a date that was certain to come about. So in a sense, this is slightly different than the towing case, the Roger Whitmore's case, in that that had perhaps a more date certain, that the election that the money was being raised for, the sheriff was fraudulently or illegally raising money for a re-election campaign. And so that had a date certain. Although this didn't have a date certain, it had an event that was certainly going to happen, or a series of events that were certainly going to happen, and closed the system. And this court is consistently held in analogous cases, as well as other circuits.
Is there anything in the record that shows what the allegations, I guess, is really all we have, of why they did this? Police.
Of why they...
Why they committed these alleged acts of convicting people that weren't guilty.
Returning to the motive concept that you were bringing up, there's no allegation of any sort of specific animosity. It's sort of a blank slate at this point with regard to that.
So that's what we have. That's how this case is framed.
That's how this case is framed on the amended complaint provided by Mr. Gamboa.
And the district court's opinion.
And the district court's opinion.
And is there any discovery left to be done?
There's really very little discovery that has been done. In fact, I can't speak distinctly, perhaps opposing counsel to, as to the extent of what discovery has been done, but it is suspended, and we are at a motion to dismiss stage. So.
Is that something we should take into consideration, the fact that there's been very little discovery?
It's unnecessary in this case, Judge Rovner, because the legal issue that has been certified here and was certified by the district court contains in it the factual predicates will enable this court to decide it. The only important facts are that this was a single scheme, as it was alleged, that it occurred over several years, as is alleged, that it included a variety of predicate acts, also alleged, and targeted more than one victim.
But now I've interrupted two people. But without discovery, we have nothing to indicate that the conduct went beyond that scheme or would be expected to occur in the future. I mean, don't you need discovery to figure all of that out?
Well, discovery is always contemplated in the context and within the parameters of a complaint. Of allegations. The certified question here specifically and accurately reflects Mr. Gamboa's allegations and the way that the district court understood them and the way that, once again, he acquiesced in their framing for the purposes of determining whether or not this appeal was appropriate.
Well, does that cabin in our typical 12B6 review?
In what sense?
In the sense that normally we can make inferences of some possibility of things happening in the future. Are you saying that the certified question limits any inference about future activity?
I think that the certified question requires or begs a yes or no answer, and it doesn't necessarily... I guess my answer would be that analyzing a certified question from a 12B6 opinion is somewhat different from analyzing a 12B6 opinion in another context. In that,
my question. So it does cabin our ability to look to any possible way that this could go on further.
I think that's right, Judge Kaney. I think that in the context of this case, in the context of this certified question, in the context of the complaint as it has been construed by the district court and as it was, to be fair, pled by Mr. Gamboa, this court is somewhat slightly more limited in determining whether or not...
Because we took that question, an interlocutory appeal on it by a certified question.
Because this court correctly deemed that the certified question represented and fairly characterized the allegations and would allow expeditious determination of whether or not the case should proceed below. I'm going to reserve the rest if that's all right.
Okay. Mr. Becker?
Ooh.
May it please the court, counsel for the city. Your Honors, this case is at the pleading stage, and all that the plaintiff was required to do was to set out a good faith complaint. There has been no discovery done. And it's a disingenuous statement by the corporation counsel to say, well, we could have answered their motion for a more definite statement of facts. They filed that motion after they answered the complaint, and then orally the court denied it before we ever had an opportunity to say we want to respond to it or not respond to it.
Mr. Becker, I must say that this argument thus far is expanding, well, my horizon certainly as to what is or is not at issue here, but did you in any way, well, okay, did you essentially abandon in the district court any claim that the bad conduct of the defendants extends to the alleged bad conduct of the defendants extends to other cases as well? In other words, when the defendants sought a more definite statement and the district court made clear that its ruling assumed no conduct outside of the Miranda murder, did you respond in any way that you would, given discovery, seek evidence of bad conduct in other investigations as well?
Did I orally tell that to the court? No, Your Honor,
well,
I did.
Well, I mean,
that.
Were you thinking it? I mean,
I certainly am thinking it, and one of the things as we sit here is they want to just isolate it's one case. It's not one case. It was five separate cases.
No.
The reason I say that is they
one
first
murder.
One murder, but five separate defendants, four different trials. When they ran out of certain people to testify in one trial, they then got one of the defendants who actually signed a false statement to testify against Gamboa and then to testify subsequently in another trial against Mr. Gayall, which happened a year and a half after the Gamboa trial. So the conspiracy didn't just end with the Gamboa trial. And then when the federal government investigated this case, the police gave their reports to the federal officials and didn't tell them it all contained all kinds of false information, which, in fact, we know now we can prove that it did, in fact, contain all kinds of false information. So the problem here is what they're saying to you is just based on the amended complaint without any discovery being done, say there is no set of facts upon which we can show either closed-end continuity or open-ended continuity.
Well, that was my question, because normally in a 12b-6 there are rules that we apply, but this didn't come up on an appeal of a 12b-6 directly. It came an interlocutory appeal, which is a certified question, though.
That's correct.
And isn't that was my question? Does that limit us what we can look at, what we can expand, and say, well, it's possible this has happened or possible that happened in the future?
Well, I think it's implied that the conduct is going to continue when you have the separate trials of the various individuals who were falsely accused and who signed false statements, and you went from trial one and you used it, and then you go to trial number two, you use it, you go to trial number three, you get one of the defendants who signed a false statement to testify against a second defendant, then you use that in trial number four, and then you get a gentleman to plead guilty in a fifth case.
Are each of these trials for this murder?
Each of the trials were for the murder. That is correct. And that is the only thing that there is one of, one murder in this case. But the situation here is that what the defendants want us to do is for you to say, well, there is no set of facts upon which plaintiff can recover simply based on the pleadings, that as a matter of law, he can't show continuity because in his amended complaint, even though the district court thought we set out enough, they're saying we didn't set out enough. And then when their motion for a more definite statement was denied by the lower court, then the case came up here before your honors on the interlocutory appeal. So what we argued against the interlocutory appeal, basically saying they're asking you to decide facts before we can do discovery to develop the facts in the case.
Well, what we don't want to do is just say, all right, this, whatever, these alleged allegations of what they did, whatever, right, we say it worked, or, you know, that the scheme, that now they've created this system that will work in the future. Or you could look back and say it happened before, and this is the second time, or this happened again. Those kinds of things, we don't have any either of that. We shouldn't speculate forward just for no reason, and we have nothing but to reflect back upon. It's strictly this incident that was alleged. True, there were obviously several trials because of the multiple defendants, but it's confined to this one murder. And that is where I'm trying to figure out why it should go beyond that.
Well, because I think it's implicit in the police officer's conduct that they would go out, and we've set it out. It's not just confined to what the defendants did. I mean, the police officer's conduct initially, we've got three different individuals who were witnesses who we've alleged were forced to sign false statements, who were threatened with other possible harm. One witness was threatened about being deported. So there was, initially there were actions against individuals who were never indicted and who were not prosecuted. Then we go through the various trials and the use of the false testimony and the use of the false reports. And then when you get to the Gamboa trial, we're now going to get this Mr. Ortiz, who was a co-defendant, and he completely changed his statement 2 weeks before trial. The handwritten statement to the police was no longer good. He went in and completely changed his statement in front of Officer Velez and the state's attorney. Then that statement was used at Gamboa's trial, probably to Gamboa's benefit because he was acquitted. But
what in your complaint indicates that the defendant's actions present a threat of future harm? Is there anything that we can...
Well, I think it's just the whole ongoing thing that you would continue to... You intimidate witnesses, then you intimidate defendants into giving false statements, then you use those false statements of the witnesses and the defendant to prosecute them and put them in jail, and then you continue on when the federal government investigates it to try to get the real killers, you give them the false reports and say, hey, everything's okay, don't worry about a thing. Now, I think from that set of conduct over a course of 5 years, it's implicit that these officers would stop at nothing, and it will again continue in the future.
I want to take you somewhere different for just an instant. You're out of state court, right? The statute of limitations was not told.
The statute of limitations didn't toll against Gamboa because he was acquitted, and then the information that broke in the case about the real killers came out 28 months after his acquittal, which was 4 months beyond the statute of limitations. And that is why...
This is a rock and a hard place.
It absolutely is. And the individuals who were convicted and went to jail, and albeit that going to jail for 4 years, probably they suffered more than Mr. Gamboa did because he did have his freedom via, you know, a bond and such, their statute of limitations tolls because they're in jail. It doesn't begin to run until the day they're released from jail. So they had a state court remedy available to them, which Mr. Gamboa did not have available to him.
But this almost looks like you're trying to put a round peg in a square hole, or the other way around.
Well, I don't think so, because I honestly think that we have the scheme, and I honestly think if we're able to develop it through discovery, that we will certainly be able to prove that this is not just this one murder case that the actions of the detectives are limited to. I think it's something that we certainly, at a pleading stage, we ought to be able to develop through discovery. And if, in fact, we cannot develop it through discovery, then they could come in on a motion for summary judgment. But certainly to cut us off at the pleading stage seems very premature to me. Because
what's the purpose of the enterprise?
Pardon me?
The purpose of the enterprise, so to speak. What is this scheme? Is it to convict people who are not guilty of murders?
I would say the scheme is that the police department, whether it's through incompetence, laziness, that they get, and I think there'll be testimony eventually through discovery that they get promotions based on solving high profile crimes, which this was, that is how they move their way up through the ranks of the police department to more plum jobs and get, you know, better pay. And I mean, quite frankly, this is a commonplace occurrence within the Chicago Police Department. Whether it's a commonplace occurrence with the defendants in this case, I'll be honest, I don't have the discovery yet to say yes or no.
Yeah, see, that's what we have to have. If it's an indictment for the whole police department is in some sort of a RICO scheme, that's a pretty big order. But this is the problem with RICO. It's far-reaching in what you can gain, but it also has some difficult hurdles.
I understand.
It's not just like a state case. You got 2 years, and I assume these other people are suing somebody. I don't know, but the ones that spent the time in prison and didn't lose the statute of limitations, because there may be other causes of action. But RICO is a unique one, and it does require some additional factors that don't come in a normal case.
I understand that, but quite frankly, I'm on my way to go.
That's all you got. I understand.
I'm on my way to go argue in the
I'm
state
sure
court about the RICO with the Burge case coming up right as soon as I leave here.
Was he in prison?
No, the Burge case is the police torture case where the special prosecutors. Quite frankly, the position of a lot of defendants is that this is a common practice within the Chicago Police Department as an enterprise, that they, in fact, manufacture evidence, manufacture confessions or statements, however you want to imply it, and have people perjure themselves on an ongoing basis.
But
and
you had no intimation or knowledge of that involving these officers within the strictures of Rule 11 that you could put into your complaint, I take it.
I don't have anything beyond what I know about this case and the five individuals who were arrested and charged in this case at the present time. That is all that I have at this time. But again, what I think really realistically should be done in this case is that we should at least be given the opportunity to take discovery to develop our claim, which we believe we can properly develop, and we can set out that this is even a more long and ongoing scheme, and it is a course of conduct and business as usual within the police department and by these various officers.
So, in other words, what you want from us would, common sensely, be something like without prejudice to renew by the city, while allowing you discovery.
Well, I don't know, without prejudice to renew. The judge has said we have a valid complaint. They're trying to say to you to rule as a matter of law that there's no set of facts that we can recover under a continuity plus relationship. They're trying to say that there's no closed-end continuity and no open-ended continuity, and the court didn't even look at whether or not there was open-ended continuity. Simply ruled that there was, that we met the requirements of close-end continuity. So they're also asking you to, I guess, be proactive and say there's no open-ended
tell
continuity.
Tell me what discussion, tell us what discussion there was, Ray, discovery.
There basically has been no discussion, Ray, discovery. We got into the briefs on these issues. We sent out initial discovery, did not receive any reply, and then when the case was coming up here, the city moved and the judge stayed discovery.
And there was no argument about it, or you didn't say, Judge, please don't stay discovery?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I believe it's like 14 or 15 months ago, but I believe we asked him to let us continue, but it was, but I honestly, I'm going to tell you, I don't remember it, because I don't want a record coming back saying I didn't. Okay. But
you want us to find that the certification we granted was improperly granted?
Mm-hmm. Well, I argued against it. I know it was 2-1 asking it to come up here. I guess I am saying I still think the city's trying to get you to determine a factual issue without discovery, and I think one of the things that they want is they don't want discovery in the case. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Becker.
Norberg.
I just have a couple of points I wanted to make. First of all, at risk of sounding glib, I don't recognize the case that's being argued by opposing counsel here. This is similar to the brief that was filed initially in this case in response that was struck by this court that attempted to argue a case that went well beyond the parameters of the complaint. What's at issue here is what was alleged, not what could have been alleged. I mean, what was alleged in this case was a single scheme. And an attempt to turn a single scheme into multiple schemes, as Mr. Becker argued, by saying there were five targets to this. So it seems as though he's trying to make two arguments and not stick down and stick to one, but only one of the arguments he made is actually supported by the complaint. And that is the theory that this is multiple schemes because there were multiple defendants. His other argument that this is multiple schemes because, as he put it, everybody, you know, or seemed to imply everybody knows the way the police does business, is nowhere to be found in his complaint. And to return to your point, Judge Rovner, I think when you raise the concept of Rule 11, I think you're absolutely right, that when you're framing a complaint and when you're drafting a complaint, you need to make allegations that you have a good faith basis for. He obviously, for whatever
could any lawyer, I know your red light's on, but is it all right if I?
Oh, sure.
Could any lawyer make such allegations without discovery? I mean, I understand what you're worried about. You are worried about some kind of far-reaching fishing expedition, I take it.
Absolutely.
And but how, without discovery, could Mr. Becker, without risking being disbarred, allege
that this is business as usual?
That this is business as usual.
I think it's important for the purpose of this case, and this relates to Judge Kaney's discussion of whether or not this is the same as a review of a motion to dismiss the decision. The distinction here that's important, the important intervening act here was our filing of a motion for a more definite statement, at which point we gave him the opportunity to make these sorts of clarifications and allegations. And had he, as we argued in our brief, at that point wanted to say, well, I'm not prepared to respond to this motion for more definite statement. Could I perhaps take some discovery to determine whether or not I can expand the parameters of my allegations? Then perhaps he could have done it at that point.
Now
he chose not to do that.
You're certain that that never took place?
I'm certain that...
That Mr. Becker never said, Judge, please let me have, or someone in his stead said, please let me have some discovery here.
Well, the record in this case shows a clear line from the filing of the complaint, the dismissal, the filing of the amended complaint, our filing of a motion to dismiss, and the denial of that, at which point the district court itself recommended that perhaps this case was susceptible to interlocutory appeal because, as he put it, he changed his mind three times with the as to whether or not a RICO claim was claimed. So we, in determining whether or not we wanted to pursue his advice and pursue an interlocutory appeal, determined that we needed to find out for sure whether or not this was a discrete and dispositive legal issue. We filed the motion for a more definite statement, appeared in court. No response was filed prior to appearing in court when the motion was noticed up. And at that point, the district court suggested to us that it wasn't necessary for a more definite statement because, as he put it, the complaint did not support allegations of anything outside of this one investigation. And counsel for Mr. Gamboa at that point said nary a word. did not make any representation, did not suggest that I'm alleging anything different than what the district court has construed my allegations to be. And once again, the allegations that are in the complaint, which counsel is also arguing here on appeal, support conceivably, it's not a meritorious argument or not a meritorious claim under RICO, but that in this case there were five separate schemes for each of the five defendants or suspects, rather. Whereas
we're going to have to wrap
okay.
it up here.
I apologize.
Would you just finish your thought?
I don't know when you're finished answering your question, but I want you to know that the red light's on.
Sure, absolutely. To answer the question, as to whether or not an allegation could be made without discovery, Rule 11 is what Rule 11 is. Allegations are made on the basis of good faith knowledge of a state of affairs. Allegations are not allowed to be made in order to seek what you aptly described as a fishing expedition. And so if this claim is not susceptible to RICO, to treatment under RICO because of that, then that is what RICO does, not what the city does.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Case will be taken under advisement.